This is your daily news fix, the Daily Brief, right here on RCR.
Good afternoon. It's Monday, February 10th, and I'm Megan McNamara, bringing you RCR's Daily Brief. First up, we have Paul Brennan with all the latest headlines. We'll hear from RCR host Marty Gibson, who will weigh in on the revelations about USAID funding news outlets and universities all over the world and the limp response to these revelations in the legacy media. We'll finish up with Natalie Cutler-Welsh and RCR Signpost, your go-to for the latest interviews, campaigns, and ways to take action. And now to today's news.
Good afternoon. The US Agency for International Development, or USAID, has been exposed as a global left-wing patronage and propaganda network. While officially providing aid and economic development, much of its funding has been used to promote US soft power and left-wing causes. The findings emerged from an audit by the Elon Musk-led Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, which is reviewing government spending for cost savings. The research also revealed that USAID funding has supported mainstream media outlets, including those outside the US, such as the BBC. US-based analyst and RCR guest Mike Benz compared the revelations to exposing a USA Truman Show, where taxpayer money helped manufacture the illusion of grassroots support for certain policies, while media aligned with Washington amplified the messaging.
There really is a sort of USA Truman Show that much of the world lives in. You know, many people found out for the first time this week that 90% of media in Ukraine is funded by USAID. Many people are just now finding out, you know, the extent of U.S. media organizations that are funded by USAID. You know, they're finding out the reach of it in everything from the unions to social media censorship to pandemic and gain of function research to, you know, strange ties even to things like terrorism and the drug trade.
In New Zealand news, the Cook Islands has reversed its proposal to issue its own passports, opting to continue using New Zealand passports. The policy shift followed warnings from the New Zealand government of potential diplomatic consequences. The debate began after Cook Islands Prime Minister Mark Brown revealed plans to travel to China this month for discussions on closer cooperation. The government's fast-track approvals regime has officially opened for applications. The initiative aims to accelerate consenting processes for major projects that support economic growth, cutting through what critics have long described as a burdensome approvals system. However, opponents argue that the changes reduce the democratic rights of communities and advocacy groups to object to developments. Meanwhile, Southern councils, coordinated by Great South, have submitted a light touch proposal for government funding under the Regional Deals Initiative launched in November. The proposal integrates Great South's Beyond 2025 Southland Plan, focusing on housing, energy, workforce development, and roading. Four councils, Invercargill, Southland, Gore, and Environment Southland, are involved. Turning to international news, Australia's Parliament has passed strict new hate speech laws, expanding the definition of hate speech and increasing penalties. The laws lower the threshold for speech to be considered hateful or inciting violence against a group, add sex and sexuality to the list of protected categories, and introduce mandatory 12-month prison sentences for displaying banned symbols. The laws were pushed through Parliament with limited debate following a rise in anti-Semitic incidents across Australia. Elon Musk has pledged to rehire DOGE employee Marco Elles, who resigned after being exposed on X for alleged racist posts. The decision followed widespread debate on the platform, with Vice President J.D. Vance arguing against left-wing cancel culture and advocating for second chances. U.S. President Donald Trump has signed an executive order freezing all foreign aid to South Africa, citing mistreatment of the Afrikaner minority. Trump condemned South Africa's recent signing of the Expropriation Act, which allows for the seizure of Afrikaner-owned farms without compensation. Trump also announced plans to resettle Afrikaners in the U.S. as refugees. Now for RCR Quick Links, the government said it will modernise its visa settings to incentivise migrants to invest in New Zealand. Chelsea Sugar has been fined for manufacturing, distributing and selling sugar products contaminated with lead. The Honourable Paul Davison KC has been appointed as an independent arbiter to determine financial redress for survivors tortured at the Lake Alice Psychiatric Hospital. Thousands of people attended rallies across Australia on Saturday after the Queensland government's puberty blocker ban. A proposed new law seeks to end wealth extraction from Wales by devolving responsibility for the Crown Estate to the Welsh government. And Sweden's government said it would seek to tighten gun laws in the wake of the country's deadliest mass shooting earlier this month.
Now, before we hear from Marty, Paul spoke to Rotorua Lakes District Councillor Conan O'Brien this morning about the ongoing battle to oppose fluoridation of the local water supply, a battle that is being waged across the country in a number of local governments that have been directed by the central government to do so, removing local decision making. With the Director General of Health, Diana Salfati, and the Minister of Health, Simeon Brown, continuing to insist that fluoridation is safe against the growing body of scientific evidence and the wishes of local communities, the debate is only set to heat up. Take a listen.
What we were asking for is not a flat determination. It was asking the Minister to go back and have a public inquiry. Is fluoride safe? If so, in what quantities?
And he doesn't also, know that.
Can he give a guarantee that the environmental effects, which is such a big part of Rotorua's, you know us, Paul, we have, you know, a number Good of, point. Over a dozen yep. of lakes, depending how you're yep. looking at our district
know
and
them
geography.
Well. I know them well.
What's going to be the effect on local fish life? What's going to be, now I'm not saying tomorrow, but in 20, 30 years' time, you know, and for them to say, well, sorry, the new minister to come in straight off with the bat and whoever, sorry, what was it, 3 weeks? He's saying it's such an important issue. Has he been aware of some of the court cases and the issues brought up overseas?
If Dr. Diana Safati ever hears this, what would your message be to her, considering that if she isn't across the data, it calls into question her qualification to be holding the role?
Well, what I would be asking her is, if she actually reads my motion, is to give it the listening that it deserves for, on behalf of not just our council, but all the councils that have made very similar noises to her. Please have a public inquiry, upfront, honest and transparent, listen to all the evidence. Then if you decide, hey, that blah, 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 make a decision, but based on all the science and all the fact. Don't just listen to what previously has been trotted out as basically the Ten Commandments and say that this is it. We're sticking with it. We don't care what you say. You know, there should be a democratic factor here, just to say, out of courtesy as a public servant, when people feel so strongly about an issue, to say, hey, maybe there's an issue here for some pause of thought.
Okay, now it's time to hear from Marty Gibson with his thoughts on the big story of the week, the USAID's funding reach and apparent managerial state grift. Welcome, Marty.
Thanks, Megan. If you stay informed with RCRX or other alternative pro-freedom media, and keeping up with the audit of the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, is a bit like trying to drink from a fire hydrant. So far, the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, has looked at less than 1% of US federal spending, and they're turning up some eye-watering waste, graft, and manipulation. USAID was chosen as the first federal agency to go after because they were the folks who most flatly told the new administration that they wouldn't be cooperating. So where was USAID's $1 billion a week going? Well, according to the White House fact sheets, it was going to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion in Serbia's workplace and business communities. That's 1.5 million. Electric vehicles for Vietnam, 2.5 million. Transgender opera in Colombia, 47,000. Transgender comic book in Peru, 32,000. Now hundreds of millions to fund canals, farming equipment, and fertilizer used to support poppy cultivation and heroin production in Afghanistan. The list goes on. And a lot of it is similarly relatively trivial on that list anyway. Factcheck.org says some of the claims are technically false. The comics were gay, not trans, and in some cases the funding came from the State Department, not USAID. There are going to be a few false alarms, like the allegation that Auckland University received $500 million from USAID. But you can't blame people for knocking over a vase here or there when you keep them in the dark. What's not on the White House summary so far, but far more interesting, is the funding that went to George Soros's organizations, which install activist prosecutors, or the ones that fund media outlets that aided the CIA and their color revolutions, or the funding that deposed populist politicians in Europe. Billions have gone to those agenda-setting media outlets that shape most people's opinions, Politico, New York Times, outlets that set the agenda and provide so much primary source material for New Zealand's ailing and untrusted legacy media. And speaking of which, if you're drinking from the fire hydrant of alternative news, then coverage of the matter in that legacy media seems like a prostatic drip of rusty water laden with parasites. As the Trump administration drains the swamp with savage ferocity, Luxon and Co.'s teaspooning out of our own swamp looks ever more anemic and uninspired. The failure of the New Zealand's mausoleum media to give us anything but deep state talking points effectively nails their colours to the mast. They are the swamp. Back to you, Megan.
Wow, what a story. It'll be interesting to see how far the ripple effects of these revelations will reach. But now it's time for Natalie Cutler-Welsh and the Daily Signpost for all things RCR.
Thanks, Megan. Hello, everyone. It's Natalie here with The Signpost, your rundown of the latest RCR news, highlights, and updates. It was great to see so many of our hosts and foundation members on the backstage pass last night. And also the peaceful picnic in Wellington happened yesterday, marking 3 years since Hold the Line Day at Parliament protest. The weather was fabulous, and Matthew Tehuki and Katana performed and led the crowd in Te Aroha and the national anthem. Other picnics were also held around the country, so shout out to anyone who got along to those. First up this week, our brand new feature show, RCR 360, premiered last week. You can now watch Alistair Harding's full episode on democracy. It's live and ready for you on rcr.media. And you won't want to miss this Thursday's episode 2, which is a detailed examination of the gene technology and all the reasons to say no to the proposed gene technology bill ahead of the deadline for feedback, which is 17th of Feb. If you'd like to have your say on this bill, and we recommend you do, head over to www.genetechgamble.co.nz, G-E-N-E, techgamble.co.nz, to receive your free action pack, including an easy-to-use feedback template to help with your submission. This week also sees the return of some of RCR's most popular shows. Money Talks is back, The New Rural Report with Jaspreet and Don, The Fourth Estate, and Lindsay Perigo, the doyen of political interviews, is back with Perigo's perspective. Meanwhile, up and ready to go on the app, Marie Buskey sits down with political mega mind Trevor Loudon for a deep dive into the latest twists and turns of the Trump train. Alistair Harding also recently spoke with King's Counsel Grant Illingworth on the COVID inquiry, and that interview is up today. He's looking into phase 2 and what it really means and what comes next. And Paul Brennan catches up with Greg Simons, unpacking the situation in Gaza and Trump's broader approach to international relations, a must-listen for global affairs watchers. Simon O'Connor is back. He's talking to Bruce Pope, his mate from the States, on what is going on in America. And finally, remember, our brand new RCR 2.0 site is live. You can head over to rcr.media and sign up now for the free exclusive content. Stay tuned and happy listening. Megan, back to you.
That's all from us today here at The Daily Brief. As always, you'll find all the links to the interviews featured in today's episode below. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you tomorrow. Until then, see ya.